I just love getting unfiltered and unfettered. And now, here's Tony and Fran.
And this is Tony, the bully opinionist, along with my honorable podcast partner, the Pope of the podcast, Sir Francis One. Kiss hey, the ring. Fran, hey, good evening.
Don't let that get around. Honorable. When did that start?
Fran, big vacation to the Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
Took the fam damily?
Took my daughter to the homeland. You know, she's born here in the South, so I took her to the land of Jersey. Bon Jovi, Bruce Willis, you know, the boss, all that.
Right.
Frank Sinatra. So, had a good time on the beach. She enjoyed it. Frank liked seeing the family again, and because, you know, all my relatives are up there. So, yeah, it was a good time. Glad to be back, though.
Well, very nice. Well, as some of our listeners might realize, we have a new hostess. I'll use that term. Her name is Elise, and we're very glad to have her. This is show business, Francis, and things, they generate, they iterate, they change.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got to bring it every night.
It's our third. We had Emily.
Yeah.
Right? We had...
she ran into some legal problems.
Yeah. Not to be talked about on this podcast.
Problems that will not be named.
But we have Elise now. We're very glad to have her. She's going to be doing our intro bits and be our hostess. So we're very glad about that. Interesting show tonight, Fran. We got a lot to talk about. We got all the favorites. Shotgunning the news, hardcore politics, the bully pulpits. Another installment of the mystifying thing that's sweeping the nation, TNAC the Magnificent.
Mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. We're actually bringing back a segment that we haven't done for a while. Who said that? A special football edition of Who Said That. The college football season started. The pro season actually starts tomorrow with Denver and the Ravens.
Yep.
What I like about this is a special football coaches rants edition of Who Said That. So even if you're not a football fan, you have to enjoy a good rant.
And these are,
I have some classics. I have some ones that might not have heard before. I have the actual clips. We'll listen to those.
Right. So guys, good. We're ramping it up on Who Said That.
We are ramping it up on Who Said That. So that'll be a lot of fun. All right. So with that, I think we're ready to get started.
Okay, boys, let's get started. Give me both barrels and shotgun that news.
All right, Fran. First up, our buddy and everyone's friend, Dennis Rodman, going back to North Korea to visit his little buddy, Kim Jong-un.
Our favorite diplomat going to see our favorite dictator. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Rodman says he's going to ask for the release of that journalist fella.
Yeah. Okay.
He's going to ask Kim Jong to do him a solid.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. All right. All right, Fran. Next up, Tim Tebow cut from the Patriots.
Yeah, we're going from one end of the spectrum to the other here, from Rodman to Tebow in one leap. Yeah, it looks like his career may be over. He vows to fight on. Classy guy till the end, though. You can't deny that. I mean, he thanked everyone in the organization for giving him a chance, said he's going to keep on chasing his dream. My only issue is I watch a lot of preseason football. There's some crappy quarterbacks that are going to be starting this Sunday.
Yeah.
I can't believe he can't find a job as a backup.
Yeah.
Something is not right. I just don't – that just doesn't make sense to me. He's a good enough football player –
that he should be playing somewhere.
We're sitting the bench somewhere. He can't even get a job as a backup. I don't
Well, they say he may be playing for the Argonauts, the Toronto Argonauts.
Well, you know, and he'd probably be a star in that league.
Hey, Warren Moon.
Yeah.
Wound up in the Hall of Fame.
Condridge Holloway, right, from
right.
UT.
Yeah.
I mean, owned that league. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's probably where you'll see him next.
All right, next. All right, Fran. In a continuing saga with our buddy Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, says that the U.S. was caught spying on Mexico and Brazil.
Well, I guess at this point, who have they not been caught spying on? But this takes on a bigger meaning because Greenwald lives in Brazil with his partner because his partner couldn't get a visa to come here. So he moved his operation down there. That still cracks me up. His partner's name's Miranda, and he got arrested. That's kind of funny.
I wonder what they heard. That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I'm not sure significance Brazil has, but you know, who knows? But so that one must have been sweet justice for Greenwald to let that one out there that
Well, and I don't think it's the end of the story because they've made things. You know, they've made noises that, look, if you're infringing on our sovereignty, that is a serious offense, and it is.
Yeah. And I don't think you've heard the last of Glenn Greenwald on this either. I think he's going to let stuff keep slipping out, and the more they keep messing with him, the more he's going to. Because he had said originally, look, there's stuff we decided not to release because we felt it was too sensitive. We didn't release the whole package. Now it seems like if they're going to constantly infringe on his rights, he's going to start dumping it all. And yeah. That could be disastrous.
Yeah. All right, next. All right, Fran, in an incident that I would hazard a guess to say has happened to all of us at some point in time, our good buddy John McCain was caught playing video poker on his BlackBerry during the Syria hearing.
Well, I think that's the part that makes it a little more significant. They're talking about whether or not to bomb the crap out of a country that just gassed 1,400 of its citizens.
A lot more serious than getting caught checking your Facebook during a business meeting.
Yeah, we're playing bullshit poker during a trading meeting, right?
Oh, goodness.
So he copped to it, though. He went on Wolf Blitzer. I forget what his program is on CNN, what they call it. Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer.
Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer.
The Oprah Winfrey of political news, right? So he went on Wolf's couch and he said, yeah, I got busted. And I lost, too. It was a double whammy or something, he said. So, hey, you know, what are you going to do? He said it was a three-hour meeting. What was he supposed to do? Well, I don't know, John. Maybe
be a sinner?
Maybe.
Yeah, I know.
You're one of two people representing your state. Maybe
goodness.
You want to pay attention.
Yeah, all right, next. And speaking of old political figures, we have a little dust up in the Cheney household,
yeah.
Perhaps.
A second generation dust up. So Liz Cheney moved from Virginia, where she could have probably won that seat, and went to Wyoming, where she'll slam dunk that seat, probably. Came out against gay marriage, which, you know, we wouldn't expect that to be a big deal, except for her sister is gay and is trying to get married. So Mary Cheney is homosexual, and that's been known. That's not a secret.
Right.
That
been out for a long time.
Right.
Actually,
I mean, I think Cheney was vice president when he even addressed the issue during the debates. But she, you know, she is obviously advocating for equal rights to marry, and so this started a little bit of a civil war inside the Cheney house, and so we'll see. Probably it'll amount to nothing, but it was just kind of interesting that Liz would take that tack. She's kind of the nastier of the two,
yeah,
Cheneys.
Right.
She's kind of got that.
She's got some lineage there.
Yeah. It's got that Darth Vader action going on.
All right, and that's Shotgun in the News.
Tony, treat me rough and give me that bully pulpit.
All right, and tonight's bully pulpit comes from a true story, actually, back in the 90s, that actually happened to me. And it's not to say that I'm better than anybody, but it's just to talk about my philosophy and the direction I think America's going. And the story goes that I was working in an office. A young lady come around and said, hey, we're authorized to wear this ribbon in our uniforms today. And I said, well, what's the ribbon for? And she said, well, it's awareness for getting kids off drugs or whatever. That's when the DARE program was big, and we were trying to get the kids off drugs. And I said, well, what do I got to do to wear it? I got to give you $1, $5, or do something or whatever. And she said, no, you just wear it for awareness. And I said, well, I'm aware. I don't need to wear a ribbon on my uniform. And, of course, at that point, she said the key phrase in this point I'm trying to make, she said, well, don't you care? I said, well, of course I care. But here's the difference between you and I, is that I care, but I don't need a ribbon to perform some mental masturbation so I can go home, sit on my fat keister on the couch, eat Doritos, watch Seinfeld reruns, and think that I've actually done something about the situation. And this is not a rant against causes. You know, there's two causes that I've adopted in my adult life, diabetes and adult literacy, and I've contributed to those causes. But we've become this kind of ribbon-wearing culture where we think if we just show something like that, it alleviates us of our guilt of actually not doing anything. I think we need to get away from the ribbon wearing and think about maybe actually getting up and contributing to our society, putting little things forward instead of just doing hollow, empty symbols that alleviate our guilt but allow us to actually not do anything. And that's tonight's bully pulpit.
Let's get hardcore.
Okay, Fran, tonight, hardcore politics, and it is a big, serious issue, and of course, it's about Syria. Everybody's talking about it. It is a huge issue. Syria, Francis, give me your opening points here.
Well, I mean, it's a mess. I was stunned by a couple things. The first that Cameron, the Prime Minister of England, put his political career on the line and put it to a vote in the British Parliament. And the upper chamber voted for it. The House of Commons, however, said no, no, no. And they're the ones who make the rule. I mean, the upper chamber is all the lords of England, and they're really figurehead. So he's probably not going to be Prime Minister come December, because that's kind of how it works in Great Britain. So one of our biggest allies is not there. So that's when the coalition started crumbling, and that's when you had to sit back and think, this is going badly already, and we're not even like ankle deep into this. And then all of a sudden, France came out of nowhere and said, well, we're with you.
Then they backed up. As soon as you get it through Congress.
Well, then they, yeah. Right, at first. And then when Obama said, I am going to send it to Congress, because the Joint Chiefs said, we can bomb tomorrow or next month. There's no advantage one way or the other. You can take the time and submit it. This is not an emergency. Then France said, well, okay, we'll wait until America gets it through their Congress. So that chest thumping lasted all of about a day, and then they're back to where we thought they would be. I guess my overriding point, I can't get my arm around it, is what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? I don't get it. Like, I'm horrified at what happened. I agree with the president when he says it's not his credibility. The world's credibility is at stake here. This guy gassed 1,400 people to clear out a town so he can mount an offensive in a civil war. 400 of those were children. The world is on trial here, and it's not his red line. It's a red line that's been established as a civilization since World War I. So maybe he's getting bad rap for the phraseology there, but he's right. But ultimately, I got to agree with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs when he said during the hearing, when Kerry was asked directly, what are you seeking as a result? Kerry went to the general and said, would you like to speak on that? And he said, no, because I don't know what we're seeking. He said that. This was not on C-SPAN. This was on NBC, on Fox, on CNBC, on ABC. I mean, this went out over the world. The leading commander of our military, directly beneath the president, said, I have no idea what we're seeking. I am not going to answer that question.
Well, and because it's a lose-lose, right? I mean,
but how does your own general not even know what you're trying to get to?
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you prep them before you go out there, at least put a unified front forward? I mean, unfortunately, and we know, Fran, that in war, as horrible as it is, it is a political issue. It mm-hmm. often comes down to politics. But, you know, this situation, I mean, it's a lose-lose.
Yeah.
There's no good guys. We're not supporting a good guy.
Right.
We're responding to an atrocity. And the problem is when you respond, you're almost by default have to respond to one side or the other. So you're either going to respond in support of Assad, who's a brutal dictator, or in support of the rebels,
right,
who, in spite of what McCain has said, I think are basically Al-Qaeda and radical Muslims.
I don't think you can believe that they're the moderates that McCain and Senator Graham from South Carolina are claiming that they are. I agree with that.
I mean, there was even a big question in the beginning, is that who actually committed the atrocity? And I think there's still some questions about who did that. The Syrian regime, and of course they're going to deny it, but they've pretty vociferously denied it.
Yeah, the words they used made you think, it made you question anyway. And certainly they've not proven to the American public, without a shadow of a doubt, that it was Assad who did it. I think everyone knows chemical weapons were used. But I agree. I don't know that the question has been answered. Who actually did it?
And I think in the popular thinking, we're just going to go ahead and assume Assad did it. But like I say, in my mind, there's no good guys in this,
right?
And
ultimately, we could, we're going to, like you say, Shep Smith said this as well on Fox. The minute you launch a weapon, you've chosen sides.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to hit rebel strongholds because there are none. The rebels don't have stockpiles of chemical weapons. Assad's regime does. So when you strike military targets, you're striking the only government ever democratically elected in that region. That's who you're hitting. And so you're going to give the rebels the momentum because you're going to set him back a little bit. So not only that, and Shepard Smith brought up another great point. If you back this guy into a corner and he turns into a caged rat, we know that there's no amount of strikes that are going to eliminate all those weapons. Who's to say he's not going to start popping them off, aim them at Israel? I mean, we could end up being the people who touch off a major war in that area. And then you're not going to be able to avoid putting boots on the ground. If you've got to get control of those weapons, you'll have no choice. And let me tell you something. He won't send that to Congress. He won't need to. He'll declare the War Powers Act doctrine, and he'll send boots on the ground to say, we have to control those chemical weapons. It's in our best interest in national security, and it's an emergency, and we have to do it. And all of a sudden, we're in a shooting war for 10 years.
Well, and while like I said, it's a lose-lose, and I think that the administration is a tough position on this. I also don't forget that this is an administration that has lied to us and continues to lie to us about Benghazi, mm-hmm. has lied to us about the NSA, has lied to us about the IRS, and I have no reason to have any trust or faith that they're going to make the correct decision, especially after what you just said about today's hearings.
Right.
And I mean, we got John Kerry, for goodness sakes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Dude, I called that months ago.
Many times.
Right? So what frightens me about that exchange between Kerry and the general, number one, the general, I believe, went off the reservation with that answer. Kerry was clear. I was watching it. He was clearly caught off guard. So that tells me the two of them are not seeing eye to eye. So if you're John Kerry and you know that, why are you letting that guy speak? The question was not directed at him. It was directed at John Kerry, and he was tired of answering. So he as exasperatedly said, well, general, do you want to handle this? And the general said, no, sir, I don't, because I don't know what we're seeking.
That's cutting your boss off the knees.
That's saying to the American public, I don't agree with my president. I'll do what he tells me, but I don't agree. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what we're called to do, right?
Right.
And even in the military, you could question leadership, but at the end of the day, when the man says jump, you jump. And that's what I got from the Joint Chiefs. But he clearly believes this is a mistake. I'm going to go with him on this.
Right.
I'm going to go with him because... And not just because of everything you just said, which is ample reason enough, but we're in, if we're strictly talking Syria, we're in this box because 2.5 years ago, when Republicans were urging the president to jump on this because the rebels had the upper hand at that moment, he messed up. You know, and his foreign policy has never been great. It's always been haphazard. There's never been a clear policy, and the decision making is bizarre, to say the least. And now we're seeing the fruits of that.
Well, and to further confuse the issue, as we talked about actually before we even started the podcast, there's no clear party lines here.
Right.
The people from both sides are on opposite sides that you'd think they'd be, and it is crazy.
I mean, when you know, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit in the signs of the apocalypse, but the two congressional leaders for the Republicans are siding with the president,
right?
And John McCain, Senator from Arizona, Lindsey Graham, Republican senator from South Carolina, siding with the president. Conservative pundits saying he's out of control. You know, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in 90 seconds of a minutia, but people are basically running back over things that they said to say something else because it will damage the president. Then you have Democrats who are saying he's out of control. I mean, it's the lines are less clear than even in Benghazi. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's when you start to see the aisle get blurred. There is no aisle right now. It is all over the place. This is a mess at home. It's going to be a mess there. And I think you've mentioned this several times. You can only hope for the status quo, and you're probably not going to get that.
Right. There's no fixing it.
Right.
There's just containing it.
And right now, we're talking about assassinating the only elected government in that region in its history.
Yeah,
think about that bizarre. The irony of that.
I mean, as a lot of people said, we could be on the eve of something really bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that doomsday scenario about Jerusalem or Israel getting hit. You know, they're responding and they're not waiting for Congress to tell them nothing. That's going to touch some things off, and man, and one of the powers that you counted on to stabilize that region in Egypt is a disaster right now. They'll not be able to step up to this.
Right.
So Israel's going to be left to their own devices, and they're going to shoot first.
Biggest refugee situation since Rwanda in the early 90s.
Yeah, 2 million people. Yeah. The guy leading that was on Jon Stewart last night. 2 million people have come across the border already.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is a definite crisis in the making. Well, all right, Francis, let's go ahead and move on to our minutia segment.
Take it away, Fran. give us a minutia.
So tonight, Tony, we're going to hit on one of my favorite subjects besides the birther. You know, birthers are my favorite subject. This is my second favorite subject. The hypocriticalness in politics. It goes on both sides. But there's a lot of hypocritical hypocrites, and they're saying a lot of hypocritical things right now in relation to this Syria issue. And we're going to set aside the fact that what we just got done talking about, because we're probably in agreement on this, is just one gigantic cesspool created mostly by some of the inactivity and bad decision-making by the current administration. But he took a lot of heat over the years for expanding, some people claimed unlawfully, the powers of the president. So he decides to send this to Congress. Now, he says, and of course, if you don't believe him, it's all a moot point, but the Joint Chiefs came to him and said, there's no need to strike tomorrow. This is not an emergent condition. We can strike next month if we had to. So we decided, okay, well, if that's the case, then let's let the Congress debate. And what does he get for that? When everyone was screaming, I'm talking Fox News, I'm talking even Democrats, liberals screaming, oh, he can't just unilaterally decide to act. Well, actually, yes, he can. That's kind of the deal. He can. Under the War Powers Act, he's allowed to do that. But he decides to send it to Congress anyway and let them debate and ask them for a resolution. And what does he get? Oh, what, this is ridiculous. What's he asking them to do? He's, you know, this is crazy. What is he even doing? You know, so he can't win. But let's go before that. When the coalition started to break down, or there really wasn't a coalition, but it was clear that Prime Minister Cameron in Great Britain had lost his support, and Great Britain was a no-go on this. So all the naysayers started jumping, oh, you know, he needs to get support. This can't be unilateral action. This can't be just the United States. He needs to get whatever. I mean, you had conservatives saying he should send this to the UN Council. That's like blasphemy to a Republican. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so in 08, they blasted him because he did the apology tour, and you detailed that pretty succinctly on our blog, when he never really said the word apology, but you could derive that from the things he was saying. So he apologized to all these countries, and of course they hated him for that. You know, he's a commie, pinko, whatever. But now those same people want him to go beg hat in hand for the assistance of those same countries who he was apologizing to. Like, and it just, I can't even really articulate, because it just burns my blood. These people don't understand that, like, videotape exists. Like, they say these things, and they speak in absolutes, and then 3 years later, 5 years later, these things come back, and they say, well, you just said this, and now you want him to do this? He's doing what you ask, but now that's not good enough. He's made a mess of this. This is a mess, and it's of his own doing. I don't think anyone of the right mind would disagree with that. But some of this minutia is just the hypocriticalness of this drives me insane. And it means nothing ultimately over the whole picture. But it just, because I watch it too much, it just, I sit there and it drives me insane. And I've run out of stuff to throw at the TV when I see some of these jerkweeds get up there and say some of the stupid things they say. And I'm quoting them before the guy can say, well, but in 08 you said this. And then to top all that off, John McCain gets up there and he says, England really is no longer a superpower, but our oldest ally is going to stand with us. And of course he meant the French. He immediately was attacked by his own people. Oh, that old fool, he doesn't, what does he mean? England is our oldest ally. Really? Really? I mean, do you people not even know, you right. Freaking teabaggers, yeah. Do you not even know your own history? You take the name of the Tea Party, yet you don't understand that in the Revolutionary War, France came to save us, not England. We were fighting England. And technically,
that whole Statue of Liberty thing, right?
Right. You know, and technically, it wouldn't even really be, it really wouldn't even be France. It was one of the, and now I'm losing it because I'm so angry. But Norway or Sweden, one of those came first with money before France showed. But France showed up with ships. They showed up with their armada, and they're right. The ones that closed out Great Britain in the final days of that war. So ultimately, militarily, France is our oldest ally. John McCain was right. Video poker or no, he was right. So it's just that kind of mind-numbingly stupid stuff, which is really ultimately means nothing It just drives me insane. So that's really.
And so that's hypocritical hypocrites and the hypocritical things they say. Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. Yeah. All right, Fran.
Who said that? Who said that?
All right, Fran, bringing back an old favorite. Who said that?
I'm going to tear up.
I'm going to lighten it up a little bit. And tonight, we've got a special football coaches rants edition of Who Said That. Now, here's how this is going to work, Fran. I'm going to play the actual clip.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to give you choices. I'm just going to ask you to name the person.
Okay.
So, I'm going to tell you, I got three, and we got two from pros, two from college. I'm pretty sure you're going to get some of them. I think one might be a tough one, and it's quite frankly, to me, it's the best one, but it's probably the least popular one.
Okay.
So, okay, football coaches rants edition of Who Said That. Let's go with the first clip.
Hello, you play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out. If it's time to go to lunch and your mom says you got to come to lunch now, well, then you leave the schoolyard and you go to lunch with your mom.
All right, Francis, our first Who Said That.
That is the perpetrator of the miracle in the Meadowlands, Herm Edwards.
Herman Edwards, a classic rant, a great football commentator. Yeah, he was a fair to Midland coach.
Yeah.
He went in the sinkhole that was the New York Jets. But, classic.
And you see now, that wasn't his fault.
Yeah,
you see
no.
What state they're in.
You play to win the game, a classic rant. Okay, Herman Edwards, on track with the first one. Let's go to the next one.
You can't turn the ball over five times like that. Holy crap. I don't know who the hell we think we are when we do something like that. Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs?
All right, Francis. Another classic rant.
Dude, I froze up. I'm sitting here for, like, yeah. I knew his first name. I'm trying to get his last name, but that is Coach Mora.
Jim Mora.
Yeah.
Jim Mora, the classic playoffs. Playoffs? I'm just trying to win a game. Okay, we're going to move to the college ranks.
This is going to get tough.
And this first one is it's an absolutely classic rant. It's about 3 or 4 minutes long. I've cut it down to a couple of the classic clips, and I think it's about 15 or 20 seconds long. So here we go.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Where are we at in society today? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! I'm not a kid! Write something about me. That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
All right. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! Come after me!
God, it's the Oklahoma State head coach.
Nice.
I cannot
Good.
Think of his name.
Mike Gundy.
Gundy, that's
Mike
it.
Gundy.
I was going to say Greenwald. I got Greenwald on the brain.
But yeah, Oklahoma State, yeah. Mike Gundy. That's about a 4 minute rant he went on, and it's
that
classic.
Is a classic, yeah.
But the classic clip out of that is come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. Now, this next one, I think this is my all time favorite. I don't know that you're going to get it, but it's about a minute long, and you got to get the whole thing.
Okay.
You got to
do
the whole thing. So, okay, here we go with clip number four.
But I'm 3 for 3 right now, right?
You're 3 for 3 right now. Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to get our two boys ready to carry them to golf tournament before practice, right? 12 cats live across the road. Our door's open. Screen's broke. We need to get a new screen door. But the screen's broke, so you can come in through the screen, but you can't get back out of it. I turn and look. There's a little kitty cat in our kitchen. So I said, what are you doing in here, little kitty cat? By that time, the cat turns, tries to get back out. That screen won't go that way. Cat starts going, meow, all crazy. And I told our players, we need more dogs. Bo's barking in the back. I have to go shut Bo up. Mel's like, what's going on? I said, it's a cat in the house. Cat in the house? I said, yeah, there's a cat in the house. So I told our players, I tried to let it out the front door. Meow, meow. The cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Meow, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
All right, Francis, do you have any idea who that one is?
Yeah, I mean, my first guess was Vince Dooley, then maybe the Auburn head coach, but I couldn't come up with it.
It's David Bennett, who was a coach for Coastal Carolina. He's been fired now, but
that's current?
Well, it's not that old. It's maybe a year or two old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was thinking way back. All right.
What I love about it is it for the first half of it, it just makes absolutely no sense. The cat gets caught in his house, and somehow he tells his players, You got to be a dog. But if you've not had it, if you've not had a chance to see it on YouTube, you really need to watch it on YouTube because it's a classic. We don't need no kitty cats in here.
Teachable moment. The cat.
All right, Francis. 3 out of 4 on our football coaches rants edition of Who Said That. All right, Fran, signs of the apocalypse tonight. What's your sign of the apocalypse for this evening?
I kind of already alluded to it. It was Eric Cantor, the second-in-command in Congress, and, of course, John Boehner, Speaker of the House, have come out strongly with the president. When's the last time you saw that? I can't remember. And the whole time that Boehner has been the Speaker, them siding with the president on anything. And, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, well
they flopped hard.
Yeah, I mean, and they're not just they didn't just give you the standard. Well, we're taking the best interest of the American people. We are with the president of the United States on this. I mean, they couldn't be more definitive. I was stunned. I didn't know really what to do with that. I was just flabbergasted.
All right. Well, mine has to do with the VMA awards and Miley Cyrus twerking, which I got to be honest with you, Fran. I had to look it up on Google. I had to Google
so
it.
Did I. With my reading glasses.
If you YouTube it, there's a how-to video. It's pretty good. I've been practicing.
Oh, God.
It's pretty hideous. Yeah. But here's my sign of the apocalypse. So on the VMA Awards, she comes out. She does a thing with the foam finger. I mean, it's just hideous. I didn't watch it. I got it like I would hope a lot of Americans the next day on the news and YouTubed it and whatever. But so everybody talks about it for a week. And so a week or a week and a half later, Miley Cyrus comes out and makes a comment about it. And to my pleasure and horrification, her comment made the most sense of anybody else's comment, in my opinion. And her comment was basically, and I'm paraphrasing, you can look it up on the news for yourself, was basically like, what did you expect? Like, I was going out there to make history for myself. I mean, she's following up Britney Spears and Madonna sword fighting with their tongues on stage. And, you know, Kanye West and his shenanigans.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you expect when you watch this? And it continues, and it continues to go. And I was saddened by the fact that, and we spoke about this earlier, people talk about how they shouldn't be talking about it while they're talking about it, right? Like, well, if we didn't talk about this, but we're going to talk about it for an hour, and of course we're talking about it now. But I was disappointed that, in my opinion, she made the most intelligent comment of all, by merely saying, what did you think was going to happen? What did you think I was going to do? Because you know what? It's going to get worse as long as you continue to tune in. That's my sign of the apocalypse.
Oh, T-Neck, I love your huge brain.
Thank you, Elise. And of course, we know that the brain is the largest sexual organ in the body, and mine is huge. This is a segment, Francis, we call T-Neck the Magnificent. And let me explain this for anybody that's listening for the first time. We send our crack staff, sequester them in a prestigious Knoxville attorney's office where they come up with 3 questions. They put those in an envelope. It's notarized. They give it to a bonded delivery service. Those envelopes are delivered to the Monolith Studio 1B mere moments before a podcast begins. I do not handle them before the podcast. Francis will hand me those envelopes, and through mental powers that I possess, through no volition of my own, that was gifted to me, I can wave the envelope in front of my head, and I can discern the answer to the question inside. And so that is T-Neck the Magnificent. Now, to make sure that this is all above board, I asked Francis to narrate the process because this is a podcast. So that's the bit. Francis, would you hand me the first envelope, please?
Okay.
I have the first envelope. I am, Francis, would you verify for the listening audience that I'm putting it in front of my forehead?
Rubbing it on his greasy forehead.
Okay. I washed. rubbing it in front of my youthful forehead. I'm getting a vision of this, Francis. It's, it is political. It is, something about a border. Something about a border.
Oh, God.
Let me see. Come to me. Just like that, Francis.
That was a quick one.
See, that's why I have no control over it.
It's a good thing.
It flashes. Do you feel this kind of the sparkling electricity in the air?
Yeah, I'm feeling it all right.
Okay, and the answer to the question in this envelope, Francis, is Get him a work visa and put him in the field. Get him a work visa and put him in the field. Obviously having something to do with legal immigration or some such in our country today. Francis, would you please open the envelope and read the question?
These envelopes are getting huge.
Burlap bag envelopes.
Okay. Get him a work visa and put him in the field. What will Tim Tebow hear when he goes to Canada to play football?
Well,
on the field, I think is what you were looking for there, sports fan.
Yes.
On the field.
Yes, on the field, in the field.
Instead of our crack staff, is our staff on crack maybe on that?
I have no control over the process. Okay, question number two. Again.
Here's the envelope.
Waving it in front of my, thank you, Francis, waving it in front of my youthful forehead. Mm-hmm. Getting a sense of, and this is, this is not, I'm getting a, this is, you know, sometimes you get vibes you don't want to get, Francis. Yeah. And I'm getting, there it is. There it is again. And this is a PG-rated podcast, and I'm going to have to start talking to our research staff because I'm a little, I don't know what the question is, but I know what the answer is.
Okay.
And the answer is, stop tweeting me pictures of your junk. That is the answer. So obviously something to do with Anthony Weiner.
Does he have our email address?
Continuing to tweet pictures of his stuff to somebody else. I don't know. Francis, open the envelope, please.
Okay, here we go. Opening the envelope. Okay. Stop tweeting me pictures of your junk. What Kim Jong-un told Dennis Rodman on the current trip to North Korea. I knew there was something going on there. I just wasn't sure.
His nickname is the Worm. So,
that's
terrible. I don't approve of the sexual references. Francis, the third envelope, please.
Third envelope.
And as we tell our listening audience, I can only do three of these because it is, after all, exhausting.
I can't take much more.
Exhausting.
We got to tell the band to quiet down. This music's a little too loud.
This is sometimes I feel like I need medical assistance after these. Okay.
Are they allowed to smoke that in here? Jeez.
Waving it. It's a gift. I claim no responsibility.
It's waving the envelope.
Francis, it's like a beautiful singing voice. You're just born with it or you're not.
Right. That's right.
I can't help it.
He's waving the envelope in the air like just don't care.
Okay. And here. And this is, again, political, I believe. Perhaps. It's got a biting edge to it.
A biting edge?
Edge. Military.
The intrigue builds.
The electricity in the air is palpable.
Our light bulbs are flickering.
I got it, Francis. Please cease talking for a second. The answer to the question in this envelope is missile in the Mediterranean.
Oh, man.
Missile in the, obviously having something to do with the Syria situation now. Perhaps President Obama. Okay. Francis, open the envelope, please, and reveal the question.
Freaking envelope. Here we go.
And the answer was missile in the Mediterranean.
What was Bill Clinton's Secret Service code name on his visits to the Middle East?
And that, my friends, and I'm barely conscious.
He's spent.
I am exhausted. And believe me, I am merely the vessel. All right, and Francis, let's go revisit the big board. Of course, I think we want to talk a little bit about Hillary because she's still the Democratic favorite.
I mean, if you could have a front runner right now, I think she would be it. And a lot of the candidates that we have on the big board are involved in this Syria issue. Rubio, Rand Paul are on the Senate Armed Commission that grilled Kerry and the Joint Chiefs today. Of course, so we know what they've said because they've been railing about it for 2 days. Chris Christie hasn't said a word because he's still running for governor in New Jersey. So Hillary, I think people were waiting to see what she was going to do. There was even an article on MSNBC's website, you know, about which way will she go on this. And I think everyone knows that if she was going to say anything, it was going to be in support of the president. How could it not? He's essentially passed the torch over Joe Biden's head to her as the nominee for the Democratic Party. So she certainly has to support him. But she's not been saying anything, and I think that's smart on her part. She finally, her office finally came out today with a written statement. It wasn't even a, you know, no one stepped in front of a microphone. It was a written statement sent to the news organizations that said Secretary Clinton supports President Obama and his decisions on Syria. I mean, you can't get more plain than that. I mean, you can't get more vanilla.
Just more vanilla without coming out and saying anything.
I mean, if you read between the lines of that, that's like, I'm going to support him because I have to, but I don't necessarily agree with how the hell he's handled this.
Right.
And I know she doesn't agree with how John Kerry's handled it because she's not said a word in his defense. I mean, he's getting roasted in the media. She's not come out and said anything in his defense. Maybe she will in the next few days. Who knows? But right now, she's letting the two Republican contenders, the two front-run guys, kind of, you know, own the spotlight on Syria. And if they're wrong, they're going to feel it. And I think, as we've talked about over and over again, this will mean nothing on her radar come campaign time. Benghazi will fill her windscreen when she starts the campaign.
Yeah.
So her little statement today was very smart politically. She doesn't want to get involved in this situation. This is a no-win for her, too. Nothing she can win by getting involved and voicing her opinion here. She's done the bare minimum. I could be wrong, but I don't think you'll hear from her again on this issue.
Yeah, I agree. It's not in her best interest to get involved at all at this point. So soon we're going to start shuffling some people on the big board, I think, is according to their ranking. Of course, I think Hillary would be number one regardless, but we can go over to the Republican board, start reshuffling the Democrats. So we'll start doing that soon on the big board. Go out and visit that. And so this begins to wrap up another episode, episode 17 of Unfiltered and Unfettered, the podcast. For as we continue to grow our listenership, it gets bigger and bigger. Appreciate every listen we get from everybody. Certainly appreciate it. And I would like to say our podcasts still remain absolutely free and handcrafted right here in the United States.
In the USA, baby.
Right here in the good old USA. So it's been a great podcast, Francis. As always, it's great spending the evening with you, chatting about politics and just chewing the fat over some of this stuff.
Always fun. Always fun.
And so tonight, for the first time, we'll say Elise. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Elise, please take us out.
Thanks, Tony and Fran, for getting us unfiltered and unfettered.